When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, in rainy Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars, and bringing to you today this episode 221 of Columbia Calling, the Columbia Calling podcast, the English voice of Columbia, out over the ether into your homes. And this week, I shall be talking alone a little bit about what is going on regarding the Mompox project. Now, the Mompox project, as you well know, those of you who are listeners of this show will know that I mention Mompox a lot. I have a hotel, the Casa Amarilla, there. And yes, it's been 11 years in Colombia and 10 years with this show. And well, it's been about 6 years in the works putting together my novel called The Mompox Project. Now, rather than take any of the glory, or rather than say that I'm trying to make it like the late, great Peter Mayle's book, A Year in Provence, it's the only type of novel that I can say it sort of appeals, it's sort of very similar to, except Peter Mayle's was a year in Aix-en-Provence, or Provence in southern France. Mine is kind of like 10 years in the Colombian Wild West. Anyway, so I've been writing about that and putting some things down on paper or typing some stuff here and there. And well, I think it's now time to start promoting this rather than just on my blog. I've put it out there on the website medium.com. So of course you can see it there, and the link will be on my page, the Facebook page, and so on, and of course on Twitter for those of you who want to read whatever I've written, if it so takes your fancy. But yes, I've put the first chapter up there because this is a podcast. This is a call for help. I need help to find an editor or an agent or a publishing house. I need help for that next step, proper guidance in this world, in this very competitive world of getting something out there. I think I can do it. I think the writing is decent enough. I'm sure it needs guidance. I'm sure I need guidance of how to put the rest of this together and so on. But there's enough of you out there. There's enough of you out there with all of your contacts and with all of your know-how and what to do. I'd like to hear from you guys. Maybe this is a call from me to you. Please, you know, look through that address book, scroll down through your telephones. Who might you know who could help me out in this situation? And then, of course, hopefully further down the line, my doctoral thesis could be something that could be put together for publication in the future. But we'll see. So this is that. That's why I'm talking this week alone. But let me let's run through the podcasts this year so far. Well, we started with 214, myself talking about the politics of this year, what's coming up. Episode 215, we had the Bollywood and Barranquilla episode with Charles Massey out of Canada near to Toronto, where we even had some, you know, he was singing some Bollywood tunes. Then we spoke to Matt Charles, a British journalist who's been out into the off limits of Colombia talking to the ELN and paramilitaries. I know it was very popular, and of course thank you to Matt for sharing those experiences with us. And of course we had on 217 Pete Watson, the academic and sports enthusiast from the UK, back on the show for his second appearance on Columbia Calling, talking about football, building community, society, and an identity in Columbia. But not only in Columbia, but all over the place. But he's a Columbia-phile, just like you and I and those listeners out there. And from Montboz, we were talking to Jay Speller, for the owner of the Casa Loma in Minca, little slice of paradise up there in the Sierra Nevada, above Santa Marta, definitely worth visiting. And we would have had Jose Miguel Jaramillo of Clark and Rose Bags with talking about his socially inclusive company here in Colombia. And of course, this final week to episode 220 of The Beaten Path, Travel in Colombia with the author of The Colombia Lonely Planet Guide, Alex Edgerton. And we were talking about jungles and other travel areas. So some pretty exciting podcasts so far this year, covering a little bit of everything. And that's why I think it's the right time for me to start talking about, let's say, the Mompos project, to start promoting, to start asking for help from you out there. And so this time, I am not going to sort of ramble on, but what I will do is, in the style of old BBC radio plays and in the style of, let's say, books being read, you know, was it the Book of Bedtime on Radio 4? And if you're as old as me, you might remember when they read books on television and it was called Jackanory. So I'm going to read this first chapter of the Mompos Project to you. And of course, it'll be coming from my voice. I'm the guy who read it and wrote it. And I'd like to know what you think of it. Of course, you can get through to me at columbiacalling@gmail.com. You can do that at Twitter as well. And the Facebook page, Columbia Calling, are all the best ways of getting through to me. I've posted it all over the ether so that you will be able to find it online, this chapter, if should you want to read it. But otherwise, here it is. Chapter 1 of the Mompos Project. I did not see it, of course. In fact, I only learned of the event several weeks later when asking after the origins of a stubborn blemish on the top stair. The brick had sailed up over the terrace wall, mercifully only glancing the Canadian girl. Not a direct hit. Blood, bright and aqueous, perverse in its contrast to the clammy nighttime heat, poured out of her fresh head wound and down the stairwell from the roof terrace. The perpetrator made off down the Coco Solo Alley, running alongside the Casa Maria. The police were called, and as usual, they arrived with the accustomed alacrity in the Colombian Caribbean town. Despite having seen the guilty party, despite being in a town where everyone knows everybody and gossip is as punctual as the daily news and taken for gospel, the police were reluctant to pursue the man in question. They preferred to log the incident as a sort of turf war between rival hotels. The stain remains to this day, however, and no amount of varnish has washed this away. Life in Mompos continued. The greatest effort one makes in Mompos is, of course, not to sweat too heavily and therefore suffer the indignity of enormous and telling armpit maps. At a daily 30 degrees plus, this is challenging. The next effort is that of establishing and acknowledging that it requires substantial effort to achieve just about anything and everything here. Walking to the town hall to renew my business license, heading to the cash point to withdraw money or just ensuring that I have enough fresh fruit for my afternoon juice are far from the mundane. They are positively Herculean tasks. Everything must be done in its own time, and allowing for the ubiquitous gauntlet of salutations to the townsfolk. Consider that my house, the Casa Maria, is roughly 1 kilometer or 5 blocks from the bank. This could mean anywhere between 1 and 20 acquaintances stopping to share a kind word, a snippet of gossip, or trying to extract gossip en route. This is conceivably why Mompocinos, as they are referred to, are late for everything. We needn't mention the Colombian or Latin condition of the failure to keep time. Mompocinos have this disregard down to a fine art. Mad dogs and Englishmen, but you'll not find me wandering the streets here in the midday heat unless in an absolute emergency. Even the stray dogs or perros chandosos know to keep to the shady side of the street. I marvel at the vernacular of the locals as they argue over a few pesos during a particularly heated game of dominoes out in front of my house, and how they manage to frenzy themselves over so little but never require any movement aside from a frenetic wave of the arm and a raised voice. Such heated debates can run for the better part of an hour, and as far as I can tell, no one breaks a sweat. Slap! The domino lands on the plastic table. Then a second slap, and this continues until another dispute or the end of a game. You have to envy the ability to shirk any responsibility. Hours are spent seated here in the shade, and the breeze, if the weather gods deem it appropriate to bless us with one, is most refreshing here in front of the banks of the Magdalena River. An unrivaled place to drink beer and play dominoes. And the beer is cheap and oh so refreshingly cold. One leads to another, and like those here involved in a great deal of doing very little, you will find, soon enough, a crate placed beside your side on the hard-packed dirt floor to receive your empties. Howler monkeys may frolic overhead. An iguana may fall from the tree onto the corrugated iron roof, causing a terrifying start. But your crate will remain in place. Monkeys and iguanas are nothing new to the domino-playing, vallenato-loving patrons of Angelita's Kiosk. But, for we outsiders, monkeys should win prizes for how happy they make us. And iguanas are awesome for being nothing more than miniature versions of Godzilla. How the local fauna manages to endure the 4 or 5 days a week of vallenato-infused aural pollution is a mystery. The same songs, heavy on forced accordion riffs. I use the term riff since I watched one patron of the kiosk during a particularly impressive haul of beer doing the best version of what would most appropriately be referred to as the accordion take on air guitar, and macho lyrics contaminating, depending on how you view the musical genre, one of the Colombia's most scenic riverbanks. But again, this is their thing. Most certainly not mine. I wonder, at times, how they would react to the Kinks, the Stones, and 3 repetitive and petulant chords of angst from a selection of 70s punk outfits. Day to day, of course, when I am here and not in Bogota, life is pretty routine. I used to spend a great deal more time in Mompox when we were but a fledgling business. I guess you could say that this whole document is an ego trip, as was the very restoration of this colonial house. I know a little about what to do and how to do it when it comes to renovations, but don't expect me to understand how to actually carry out the process. But here we are, one house done, another underway, and a third somewhere in the pipeline. If it is raining heavily, my day in Mompox begins with a rescue mission and a prayer to the weather gods that the Magdalena River in front of my house won't rise too fast. It sounds trite, but the sight of a rain-flattened garden, flooded kitchen, and puddles in the sitting room can take the sheen off an otherwise beautiful guest house in a colonial mansion. Everything is in order, and it's 6 a.m., and Wendy, and I use the name Wendy, but she has since retired, and we have been through some 70 maids in 10 years. We have Luciana now, but by the time I get to the end of this document, we'll doubtless have moved on multiple times. Anyway, Luciana, Wendy, arrives to start preparing for breakfast. I can hear her dropping pans into the sink as I sip my coffee on the balcony and watch the howler monkeys at play in the trees in front. I think of how this noise will inevitably rouse a few guests. Right now, I don't care. Perhaps it rained last night and the morning is fresh. I'll tell the injured party that the ruckus they heard was the gurning and snarling of my primate tree-dwelling neighbors. If we are in a Colombian holiday season or on a long weekend, there is the significantly increased risk that the vallenato music will be turned on early to cater to the overnight revelers. This is Colombia, after all, and partying comes as second nature to a costeño. Life starts early given the soporific heat, and if we want to get good quality meat, I need to be out and about before 6:30 a.m. If I don't feel like dragging myself across town to the butchers, you can find me instead buying cheesy almojábanas from a street vendor. Usually, those selling these tasty, doughy, and fattening breakfast treats are little more than 9 years of age, and as a rule, these rings of doughy goodness must come from the nearby town of San Sebastian. I insist upon this. I don't know why, but the ingredients from San Sebastian are so much better. Something you learn after a while here. Monty, my irrepressible Weimaraner, is threatening to dig up trash in the street, and I have to decide whether to walk him through town or hop on the bicycle. If I'm on the bike, I can wear him out and avoid chatting to anyone and everyone on the street and get back to the job in hand of running the guest house. Rubbish, trash, desechos, residuos, basura. Why does Mompós produce so much of this? And why, despite paying for the refuse collection service, do we not have one, and have we not had the service since November last year? That's 8 months with sickly, smelling human detritus building up alongside the highway into town. That's if it hasn't already been tossed into the river. I guess you could say that if Bogotá, the capital city, cannot get its act together and sort out their waste problem, then why would a small and isolated town of roughly 43,000 people in a forgotten or overlooked, well, depending on how you see it, town be able to manage it? A case of irresponsibility twinned with corruption. But you get the impression that the people don't really care and that my middle-class Northern European sensibilities are distinctly out of place in rural Colombia. Remember that we run on a currency of shit tickets this far south of Mexico, and toilet paper does not go in the toilet bowl for fear of clogging up already overworked drains. The idiot guest who flushed down a tampon is firmly ingrained in our collective memories, since it was a most personal experience retrieving this item from the tracheal U-bend. And she was a Colombian. She should have known better. I could accept this crime from a foreign visitor. But no, I am not going to grant this person the leeway. If you've gotten as far as Mompós, you have had to have spent a nice night elsewhere in Colombia. You don't happen across Mompós. You plan to come here, and chances are you've been privy to the telltale signs plastered onto the facing wall of the commode asking, nay, pleading with you, not to dispose of your paper in the bowl. Not to sound the Grinch, but there are times when a small town living grates. So much gossip. So today I decide to walk. I chat to the neighbor, a stranger, a man on a bicycle who has been identified to me as a thief. This conversation is even more brief. And one of my wife Alba's horde of relatives. Sabina, Alba's grandmother, is a mother to 12. I'm not certain that my wife can 100% name all of her cousins. And that's just the official ones, the ones from within wedlock. I later found out that the thief on a bicycle who would sidle up and make small talk to passing tourists, easy prey, was the victim to a particularly nasty bout of social cleansing, or limpieza social, which took place in Mompós towards the end of this year. Only his bicycle was retrieved from the river near the town of Santa Ana. With my walk and some rudimentary shopping done, I head back to the Casa Maria via the old customs house. I love pineapple season. Here, docked where the boats that transported Simon Bolivar in his quest for South American independence from Spain, along this waterway, would have harbored, is a long and narrow chalupa filled with hundreds of the fresh fruit. For under 1,800 pesos, I pick up two, and the vendor strings their spiny stalks together so I can carry them easily. I am used to hearing conversations behind my back, and as is the norm, there is a comment within earshot that the gringo has a gringo dog. I presume this is due to Monty's fair eyes. On a daily basis, I feel the weight of history here, and usually it strikes a melancholy chord with me when I see the abandon that some parts of the town suffer. Corruption, indifference, and local idiosyncrasies have left Mompós in decay. Nowhere is this melancholy better illustrated here than in the Plaza de la Concepción. An ornate church offers some shade at the right time of day and casts a cooling shadow over the newly restored plaza. While the plaza was restored with vigor, despite the best efforts and academic snobbery of the town's Academia de Historia to thwart this progress, by the government and with help from various international organizations, the market building and customs house overlooking the river, perhaps the only building that could rival the Santa Barbara Church as the town's most iconic, has been left in a virtual freefall of decay. Now an open-air urinal for Mompos's vagrants, the drunk, and a huge and pungent-smelling bat's nest, this Republican-era construction par excellence received little notice this year until President Santos came to town. So as to encourage townsfolk to come and listen to the promises of what the Colombian premier would bestow upon the Mompos, a huge awning was erected to offer shade. Those organizing the president's visit could doubtless see the flaking and poorly tended building, but only a fraction of the columns. These were hastily painted. Once the president was long gone and the awning only a distant memory, some three-quarter painted columns are what remain of the promises to Mompos. My mood lifts, and back in the Casa Maria, emails answered, guests attended to, perhaps regaled with a few tales from my own experiences here that seem as if plucked from the magic realism of Gabriel Garcia Marquez, I look forward to my siesta. The siesta is positively encouraged in Mompos, and I heartily sign on for this tradition. I swing in the hammock strung in my apartment away from the guests and catch up on some shut-eye or reading. This is quiet time, as the whole town is seemingly asleep as well. The fan just pushes the hot air around, but if we're lucky, there might be a mid-afternoon breeze that will later usher in a rainstorm and bring the temperature down. I've had, on occasion, three siestas in one day. This is pushing the limits of acceptable behavior, even in my book. If no guests arrive before midday, it's unlikely that they have traveled overnight from the interior of the country. I guess that the fact that it's tricky getting here is a blessing as well, in that there are set timetables to the influx of tourists. This is also a perfect filter on the type of tourists we receive. Around 3 p.m., the buses from Cartagena or Barranquilla are due, and their arrival is signaled by the dozen or so motor taxis that chase them through the town, jostling desperately for business. I stand in the doorway and watch to see if any potential guests alight. In my experience, travelers don't like to be harangued upon arrival, and the motor taxi drivers play into this trap, almost ensuring that the Europeans and North Americans will walk this way just to avoid their thronging and touting of hotels. And after a certain hour, there'll be precious few arrivals. There are exceptions to this rule, of course, such as the lone Israeli and his Danish girlfriend, who arrived late one night and promptly asked if Mompos was like Bogota or Medellin, mucha rumba. To this day, I wonder how they got here. After all, you have to cross a river and then travel miles upon miles of unpaved roads. There is, of course, rumba, but this is not the attraction. Perhaps I'll have a beer with a guest or two on the roof terrace at sunset. Beforehand, I make sure that any bookings are organized for the following day and then haul a floor fan up top to dissuade the more insistent mosquitoes. This beer may lead to another, but I have a rule that by 9:30 p.m. I limit my interaction with the guests. Hopefully conversations will have sprung up between new arrivals or even possible romances allowing me to take my leave. And there have been romances, more than I can possibly remember, and far be it for me to damage potential returning visitors by putting their amorous holiday stopouts into print. A German cyclist who claimed to be leaving in the early morning to beat the heat and then proceeded to down beers into double figures with a girl from the Czech Republic, who then left before he did without ever having rumpled the sheets in her room. Just like any self-respecting traveler, the German was not shy about recounting his experiences while nursing a coffee the following morning and then cycling off in the midday heat. An action which cannot have helped his dehydrated state. Then there was the girl from Medellin who, whilst on a voyage of discovery for her and her accompanying future mother-in-law, did some self-exploring with an English chap, firm in the knowledge that the suegra, mother-in-law, would not interrupt their get-together. It was only upon their departure that we realized that the young lady had been slipping sleeping pills into her mother-in-law's evening juice. Doña Carmen, she said, I've slept so well here in Mompos. So while I think about it, why not mention the case of the Spaniard who, having arrived in a group canoeing up the Magdalena River, was shocked to find a former conquest, ably demonstrating the dogged tenacity of a Colombian lady, from Bogota to have followed him here to Mompox. Mompox, a town so distant from Bogota that it feels like another universe, where seemingly you would deter even the most persistent suitors just by the perceived difficulties in reaching this town. He was less than impressed, and rather than taking one for the team and squaring down with the young lady in question once more, he settled up with her travel companion in the early morning in a hallway. No, I was not spying. It so happened that one of our reserve water tanks on the rooftop had exploded around 5 a.m. and I was up there trying to put an end to the deluge. My night porter, agitated by the spectacle no less, was wondering what to do with the entangled couple laid out on the colonial tiles. Finally, I delegated to him. He hailed down a motor taxi in the street and sent them off to a rent-by-the-hour motel on the other side of town. The ensuing fallout, though, between the two friends, was that the travel companions no longer were speaking to one another, and rather than making up, would use my 12-year-old neighbor, Amalia, as a go-between in their conversations. Awkward situations abound and will doubtless continue, but this is human nature and human lasciviousness. One only wishes that in the heat of the moment, couples would close the shutters on their windows so that my poor, long-suffering cleaning staff would not have to encounter monos, monkeys, as Caucasians are referred to here, doing the beast with two backs as they do the rounds about the cloister garden and the corridors of the colonial house. The way I have painted it suggests that we are indeed running a motel, but no, this is not what the Casa Amarilla is about, just that we receive a high number of tourists, both foreign and domestic, and being an observer of the human condition, I guess that people behave more poorly in hotels as they are not at home. So what of it, I suppose? When we opened in 2008, there was a ripple of mobilization from other businesses in town, principally those involved in accommodation, to get us shut down. Yes, we have received visits from the police acting on an anonymous tip-off that we were running a brothel or a motel, neither of which is legal within the confines of the historic center. We have been accused of dealing drugs, not having had the correct paperwork, but over time these accusations have ebbed. One of the more inventive ploys to have me attacked was to call a meeting. Formal letters were sent to the Hotel Union, which indicated that members of a delegation from the Japanese embassy would be attending to promote Mompox and to invest into the tourist infrastructure here. Something smelt awry, principally because the arrival of a delegation, let alone a Japanese delegation, would not go unnoticed in Mompox, and we had seen no instances of Japanese people in town. So rather than go myself, I sent Carmen, my manager, and as she returned, it was all confirmed that the whole invention was a charade to get me into a room with irate and envious hotel owners to voice their displeasure with me. Carmen, of course, being the robust and take-no-prisoners costeña, reminded them all that on the event that the Casa Maria was full, which was happening fairly frequently at this time, we had sent tourists to all of the other establishments in town. Of course, our list of referrals started with those who had been less ghastly to us, and then at the end of the line would be the most beastly rivals. Of course, they all denied any knowledge of this policy of ours and claimed to have received no one citing the Casa Maria as a reference. As a former tourist policeman once declared to the most prolific shit-stirrer, creating all sorts of problems in town meetings regarding us, he said, "The Casa Amarilla is more legal than you are." And then when I asked for an explanation as to why this behavior still continued, the same policeman uttered the immortal line, "Si la guerrilla no mata a Mompox, la envidia sí." Literally, if the guerrilla doesn't finish off Mompox, envy will. And that is, ladies and gentlemen, the first chapter of the Mompox Project. So I'd love to hear to you regarding this piece and regarding the rest of the book. And hopefully I will get some nice feedback from you. And maybe some of you out there will have contacts that will be able to help me. Remember, you can reach me at columbiacalling@gmail.com and indeed at Twitter, Columbia Calling, and on the Facebook page. Thank you again for listening. I've been Richard McCall. This has been episode 221, intensely personal from my account, but to episode 221, the first chapter of the Mompox Project. And that's me signing off for today. Thank you and goodbye.
Corriente, con chinchorro y atarraya.